All right, so I get to fanboy a little bit right now because one of my favorite things in the world is a podcast called Still Processing. It's hosted by Jenna Wortham and Wesley Morris, and it's like going out to dinner with two of your smartest friends on a night where you feel like you might just be able to figure out what's going on in the world before dessert hits. You know, they talk about anything. They'll talk about technology, movies, tennis, what it's like being black and visiting the African American Museum of the Smithsonian for the first time, or they'll just argue about what hot jam is going to be the song of the summer. But no matter what they talk about, I always want to hear what they have to say about culture and what it says about us. Now, I'm obviously fascinated by what our food says about us, so I'm thrilled to have them join me. So Jenna, Wesley, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us. It's a pleasure.
Happy to be here.
You two are absolutely two of my favorite thinkers about pop culture and technology and what they all mean. So I'm super excited to talk to you about what I've come to realize is sort of the operating assumption of my career. So I hope you agree with me.
Okay.
But that is this. I think that for the past 10 years or so, food has been moving like closer and closer to the center of our pop culture. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is, like, in the way that we used to care only about movies or music, we now care about food in a similar mm-hmm. kind of way. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say the whole, especially in the last 10 years thing, is that I think about, okay, when Twitter started getting big, I remember everyone bust on it and it was like sort of embarrassing. And their whole thing was like, God, like, anyone really wants to know what you have for breakfast? Like, that was the line, right? That was the line when you wanted to cut down someone and be like, I joined Twitter. But now you look, fast forward however many years later, and you, like, Instagram has, like, what, almost three times as many users as Twitter? And I swear, like, half of Instagram is literally mm-hmm. what you have for breakfast. So did something happen? Like, did our attitudes change? Like, what happened? And am I right? You can tell me if I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Food is a big part of how we express what we're into and who we are and what, I don't know, like, I was going to say what trends we're paying attention to, but there's so much signaling we do with our diet, mm-hmm. where you go, how cultured you are, what your food experiences are.
Yes. I also think that it's one of the last experiences that can't be changed. I think that one of the things about food is that it's personal, it's communal, it's visual. Restaurants are now, I've been reading, thinking about how to maximize their Instagrammability.
Sure.
And how to serve and plate so that the food is Instagrammable and how to
package. And the lighting works.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're 100% right. I mean, I could see this happening at the beginning too, where I was one of those people who was interested in taking pictures of, I think my Instagram avatar still is a fish that I ate at Eataly in like 2010. It was a branzino and it was really good. But then I stopped taking pictures of food.
Why?
It kind of made me feel sad.
Well, it's a funny experience to be in a restaurant and watch someone be really obsessed with taking a picture of their food, of their plate, of their meal. Mm-hmm. But I don't know it's sad necessarily. It's just it's curious.
It is a different way of blessing your food though, right? Like you're not like thanking God. You're like you're offering your meal to Instagram instead.
Yeah. It's thank you, Kevin Systrom.
Right. It's like a weird development.
It feels odd because it's almost I mean, again, I try not to harbor any judgment about anyone, you know, what they do with their food. Like, you do what you do food, but, like, mm-hmm. what brings you most mm-hmm. pleasure and sustenance from it, hopefully. But I do also have a little bit of a pang when I see that. And part of it is maybe because even, like, at home, like, I get pretty live if I'm, like, dinner's ready and my wife is, like, you know, playing Word with Friends or whatever. I'm like, babe, let's eat. It's hot. Babe, come on over. And she'd be like, all right, I'll be there in a minute. I'm like, ugh. Like I'm watching the food die. Like something about its spirit is lifting with the steam, you know?
That's
but
real.
Again, I don't know. I'm not eating that food. You are. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But for me, I also look at that and I wonder, you're seeing someone in the moment where they should be having this intimate bodily experience. And they're mitigating it, right? Mm-hmm. They're like putting this thing in between themselves mm-hmm. and this thing that should be feeding their bodies. And maybe there's just an instinct there that feels like, oh, that's weird.
Well, maybe it's a reaction to the notion when we sit down to break bread, it's a moment of communal sharing. Mm-hmm. It's a moment of just, you know, almost like a meditative experience of just the act of eating and chewing and swallowing, or at least that's how we maybe, you know, idolize it. But whenever I see someone taking a picture of their food, I'm really happy because I get a lot of my, this is really sad to say out loud, but I get a lot of my nutrition information via like Instagram. So I love seeing how other people are doing healthy living. I get really into like hashtag Whole30 because I'm like, what is that? Or, you know, if
I'm sorry, what is hashtag Whole30?
It's a style of eating about, you know, it's basically prioritizing, you know, unprocessed foods, lean proteins, fresh fruit, et cetera, and just seeing how people are organizing and doing meal prep and meal planning, which are things I didn't grow up with. I mean, I grew up in a very Southern household, shrimp and grits, you know, biscuits and gravy, stuff that, you know, my figure now that I'm in my 30s, like that's not going to work for my day to day. You know, I can't bring a tin of, you know, country fried steak in for lunch as much as I'd like to. I can't. So I need information about how to live and how to be. And I like seeing how other people, you know, construct and organize their week of eating at the office.
So I have no data on this with the picture taking, but I wonder if it's the same thing. I'm sure there's data that can be applied to this hypothesis that I'm about to offer you to, which is that I think it's the same dopamine rush that people have when they're willing to risk their whole life to be on the phone and almost die. Like that moment where like you're dragging three roller bags behind you and you've got your phone in one hand and you're like in the subway station. You're like, I don't know, a half an inch from falling onto the tracks, but you don't care because you're like, you're on your phone and you're so high on the phone and the experience of communicating whatever it is that you are or experiencing whatever it is that's on the phone that tune all out. Your other pleasure sensors are sort of aimed at this one device.
Yeah.
And so I think you're actually like momentarily not only shutting off it's not shutting off your brain, but I think you're completely estranged from your gustatory senses and your olfactory senses in that moment.
Yeah, you're just feeding a different instinct, feeding another pleasure center.
Right.
And actually, it's interesting what Jenna's saying too. It's like, on one hand, if you look at that moment of the person taking the picture or whatever, there's that kind of vibe of, well, are they removing themselves that experience? You're thinking about what they're losing, potentially. But then the other thing is like, oh no, you have this incredible community that you can feel, or you know that you're part of this larger system now, this larger organism that's creating inspiring moments for other people, and you're taking inspiration from it sometimes. And it feels like, it's almost like what you said earlier before, Wesley, I knew it was a joke, but like you are sort of offering your meal to Instagram before.
Oh no, yeah.
But I also think there are other reasons beyond social sharing that people take pictures of their food. Because I think, especially now that smartphones have gotten so much better at aggregating and organizing information, I have food diaries on my phone where I just want to see how I was eating seasonally. Or I wanted to share them with one friend. Or, you know, I tend to go through periods of time where I'm like fermenting a bunch in my house, or like I'm only eating fermented foods, or I'm only eating like things that are liquid. And it becomes like a running joke. So it's like a way for me to be in conversation with one person who's like, look at my smoothie again. You know, it's like I'm taking a picture, but it's not necessarily for anyone other than myself or one other person, which I think is also an important part of food being social but not publicly shared.
I have a friend named Danny Chow who lives in LA, and Danny Chow eats everything like a lot of really good LA people do. He eats everything, and everything he eats he puts on Instagram. It's Chau if you want to see his meals. He doesn't offer a great deal of commentary, but there's so much pleasure in just the way he shoots these images. And the food looks great. And sometimes it's at a restaurant that I'm familiar with. Most of the time, as a person who only visits Los Angeles, it's someplace I've never even heard of before. And it's the gamut of every single type of eating experience you could possibly have. And that, to me, actually is a form of meal for me.
Yeah.
I can't eat anything that he's actually taking a picture of, but it does satisfy some basic food-oriented curiosity that I have about other people's dining out habits as well.
Well, especially now, I mean, you know, Instagram is, just going back to Instagram, it's evolving as a tool, and you now have the ability to collect images and make collections. You can bookmark things. So I had a couple of friends who were all in Japan recently and eating all over Tokyo, eating just all over the country. And I don't have plans to go to Japan. But when I do, I'm going to go in that collection and be like, where'd they eat? Because I want to eat there. So there is a way in which
that experience, absolutely, that imagination. There,
absolutely. Right? I also kind of really love, this is so embarrassing to admit. I feel like I'm about to admit that I had McDonald's for breakfast or something. But I just.
The hash browns are legit.
I mean, look, yes. No shade. But I kind of really like Instagram food crazes, like when people go to Black Tap and want the giant sundaes on top of the brownies with the M&Ms and a 3-pound gummy bear at the top that you can't eat. You just go and spend $60 so you can take the picture. And, you know, and people want the cronuts and then the cronut bacon, you know, bacon, egg and cheese sandwich. And then all that stuff to me, I know it's so gimmicky and I know it's so silly, but it actually brings me a lot of pleasure just because I feel like it feels like a weird new, obviously very capitalistic, but a weird new brand of food culinary creativity that I'm used to only seeing on reality food competitions or it feels just like a thing that exists alongside of all these other categories of how we eat now. But it just brings me a lot of joy to look at it.
Who doesn't want to feel like there actually is a Willy Wonka somewhere, right?
Yes! Oh my right, God, yes. That's exactly it. That's exactly what it is.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming in today.
No, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
It's great to talk with y'all.
It's an honor to be on the show.
Oh, come on. Stop it.
It's true.
It's really fun.
Jenna Wortham and Wesley Morris are the hosts of the podcast Still Processing.